Deadly UFOs and the disappeared. Why are so many people disappearing from this planet? Areas are simply disappearing. So many very strange things. And, you know, as we were talking with Rob about, there's something very weird afoot here. We're going to get into some of this when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Rob Shelsky with us, of course, in his work, his other one, Deadly UFOs and the Disappeared. This, Rob, fascinates me because something's going on. People are disappearing. I have David Pilates on the show several times, and he is a expert in people disappearing at state parks. He will not tell us exactly what he thinks is going on, but you could tell from his feelings that there's something very strange afoot. Tell me your thoughts about this, the disappeared people.
Well, it's an ongoing problem, and it's a big one. On average, 900,000 people disappear every year in the United States alone. This does not include those that are not reported or Americans who have disappeared abroad. That's just our country. So worldwide, it's in the millions. Now, most of the people who disappear do show up sooner or later. I mean, people disappear for different reasons. They get abducted, they are murdered, or they simply want to start a new life, or home life is just too terrible to want to stay there anymore. Even so, that still leaves thousands upon thousands who simply have vanished for good. And also, there's another way you can disappear. You can be murdered, and my book deals with both that and the actual disappeared themselves, because there seem to be an awful lot of UFO researchers that have been murdered or have died under very mysterious circumstances. And this has been going on ever since the Roswell incident, and not only here but abroad in England as well, including the author Sidney Sheldon with his book, The Sheldon List, that he based his fiction book on. But the Sheldon List itself is quite real. So it's a problem.
Well, it's a huge problem, indeed. What do you think is happening to them? Where are they going? What are they doing with them?
Well, if you're speaking of the ones that actually disappear completely and forever.
Yeah, and they never come back.
Right. They're being taken for some purpose. If you go by the abductions, it could be for experiments, although the abductees usually come back. But the others that have disappeared permanently, they must have some long-term purpose for them. And that's a frightening possibility, because the truth is we simply don't know what that is, but it doesn't sound like it's a good thing.
No. Are they food?
Well, there is one theory that they are food. But I would find that an odd theory. I mean, yes.
Possible.
It's possible. And when an entire village disappears, it does make you wonder if they aren't cattle fodder for some alien species. But when they go out of the way to take people off of a front porch, as they did with a crippled man back in 1763, he just disappeared completely, never came back, and he couldn't move under his own power. Things like it makes you wonder, because do you really go out of your way to come down to Earth just to steal one person for a barbecue? So there has to be some other purpose. What that purpose is probably not a good one. I suspect it may be for genetic experimentation. It may be for body parts. It could be for forced labor. They may have a population decline going on, and they may need a slave labor population. Sitchin thought this.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at Western civilizations, every country that becomes industrialized, the population begins to fall, and the only way you can maintain it is by immigration. Japan's a good example of this. They don't have immigration. Their population is really crashing. Russia's is crashing. Ours would be crashing if we didn't have immigration here. So, yes, they could be slaves. They could be any number of things.
I think there's something very nefarious going on. It's just either they're eating them, or they're doing something. Now, you know, if they needed our DNA, for example, to help their civilizations, you know what? They could come here, make themselves known. People would volunteer to help them.
Maybe, maybe not. I'm sure there would be some that would. I'm sure there would be some that wouldn't. They may be used for multiple purposes. I mean, yes, they could be used for food. They could be for body parts. They could be nice organ banks. Maybe that's why they might be trying to hybridize us to be more like them, so that the body parts match better or more genetically unmatched.
They started on cattle mutilations, and now they've moved up to us.
Exactly. But it does seem strange that, I mean, they do seem to pick on people that are isolated, like the Flannan Isles disappearing of the two lighthouse keepers. They just vanished.
Tell me that story.
Well, it happened in 1900. There were two lighthouse keepers managing a station on a rock, basically, and they just suddenly vanished. When the relief came, they didn't find them. They found their clothes, their food, everything. They didn't find them. The official explanation was they must have been swept away by a freak wave, but further investigation showed clearly no freak wave could reach as high as where they would have been. Furthermore, both men wouldn't have left the lighthouse at once. The rule was one stayed, one went out, but you didn't have two together. And the evidence seems to show that they didn't go out together. One did and one didn't because of a missing rain gear. So no one knows what happens to them. They've just absolutely vanished, never found, bodies never traced, nothing. You've got the Bennington Triangle in Vermont between 1920 and 1950. People kept disappearing there, one right off of a bus. It goes on and on and on. People just vanish here, there, and everywhere, and they are never seen again. No trace of them. Sometimes their clothing is left behind, in the case of the crippled man back in the 1700s, but no sign of him. There's no way he could have made it off on his own. They left him on the porch, went out to get him later on, and he was gone.
He's gone.
His coat was there, but he was gone. 1975, Jackson Wright's in the Lincoln Tunnel in New York. Condensation builds up in his windshield. They pull out of the tunnel. He pulls over. His wife goes out to wipe it off. She disappears. Never seen again. Nothing.
Just like that.
Just like that. People. Ambrose Pierce, a very famous person, disappeared in 1913, December 26th. He was an American editorialist, a journalist, and oddly, he wrote a story about a man disappearing by walking across the field and witnesses seeing him simply disappear. The story was fiction, but then he disappeared. No trace of him has ever been found.
Well, now, what if these people are merely walking through some other time warp and they're gone and they just can't get back?
Well, that is one theory, that it may have been a time warp. It may be a dimensional warp. And a tear in the fabric of space-time. Yes, it's definitely possible. But if you go by the number of disappearances, there must be an awful lot of those tears in the fabric of space-time, and they must be everywhere around the planet, which is possible. But also, UFOs have been cited in some cases with regard to these disappearances. With the disappearance of the Chinese village in China.
Tell us about that story.
Okay, well, this supposedly happened back around in 2010, and it was a Chinese village. It was in the, and forgive my pronunciation of the Chinese name, the Kinling Mountains in the Zhangji province, and UFOs had been sighted there, and then all of a sudden, the rumors started that an entire village of people had simply disappeared, not the village, but the people. Witnesses say that the roads and the freeway near the village area had military on it, that there were tanks, missiles, transport vehicles covered with canvas. Some people think there might have been a nuclear accident. There's a nuclear power plant near there, but that wouldn't account for them bringing in military forces with missiles and tanks. It just doesn't make sense. They disappeared and supposedly have never been found. They're not the only ones. There was a Canadian village in 1930 that the population disappeared.
How many people?
The accounts vary. Some say it was 30 men, women, and children. Others say it was as many as 2,000.
Gone. All of them.
Gone. Just vanished. Another strange thing is it looked like several dogs had been chained up and had starved to death. And yet, when the first person who happened on the scene, Joe LaBelle, he found fires still burning, the embers still there, half-cooked food burnt in the pots as if they had just left. There was no sign of anyone. They had left everything behind, and the people were never found again. This was the Anjikuni village in the...
It was an Eskimo village, right?
It was an Eskimo, Inuit maybe, they might be called now. But yes, and they simply couldn't find them. They couldn't find anything. They were just completely gone and had left everything behind. By the way, there's also varying accounts of the graves. One account says one grave was dug up and the body had disappeared. Another one said all the graves had been dug up and the stones had been stacked in two piles, and yet the ground was frozen solid. They don't know.
My God. Were there any reports of UFO activity prior to these disappearances?
Searchers said that they noticed strange blue lights on the horizon one night, and that these clearly were not the aurora borealis, the northern lights. They don't know what they were. Mountie supposedly also investigated this incident. They went there several hours later after LaBelle had come back with his tail and telegraphed them, and they couldn't find anything either. One Mountie did claim to have seen an illuminated flying thing, as he called it. It was cylinder shaped.
Prior to disappearances.
This was after the disappearance, while he was in the area searching
after.
For people. Mm-hmm. Shortly after, hours later.
Well, you know, no coincidences. So it's strange that a craft would be in the area before or after.
Well, the blue lights on the horizon, this other report of a cylindrical object that was illuminated as if from within. Yeah, it's very strange, and there is just no way to account for it. They don't know. No indigenous people in a Arctic or subarctic environment would leave without their clothing, their rifles, their food, their supplies. You simply would not do this.
No.
And then not to find the bodies frozen or lying somewhere miles from the village.
Even one.
Nothing. So what happened to them?
Oh, that's a good guess.
My opinion is that they were taken. So
all at one time.
All at one time. And I don't think they had much choice in the matter. There was no sign of panic either. It was as if they were just snatched in mid-stride, is the way I would describe it, because there wasn't any kind of havoc or chaos or, you know, things strewn about.
I mean, they were probably just zapped, and they just all floated up or something, huh?
Well, that seems to be the case with these individuals. And do remember now, with abduction cases, the abductees often report that the beings come in through the walls and float them out through the wall or up through the ceiling on a beam, as if they were being dematerialized.
That's right.
You know, so if they could do it with them, they could do it with other people as well. But again, there seems to be a total lack of morality on the part of these beings, whoever they are.
I mean, what right do you have to just snatch somebody?
Well, see, my feeling is they probably don't have a concept of right or wrong. They probably are very pragmatic. If your sole intent is survival for the long term, and I'm talking for eons,
right,
here, then you don't really care what you do to survive. Your morals would be based on what does it take for us to survive.
Well, they could be, robots that really don't have emotion, and they've been programmed to just snatch and take.
They could be. If you're thinking of something like the von Neumann machines that simply are replicating themselves and spreading through the universe and so don't have. But remember now, we think dolphins might be intelligent, but we can't seem to communicate them beyond the barest levels, not even enough to prove if they are intelligent or not. Octopus is supposed to be highly intelligent. They do things that astound us, but we can't communicate with them either. If we can't communicate with supposedly intelligent species on our own planet, what? We might have nothing in common with an alien species from another world. They may have no emotions. They may have no concept of morals as we do. So the idea that as civilizations evolve, they become more moral, you know, and more benevolent and benign may not be true, not for all.
Are they predators, in your opinion?
Yes. They fit every definition of a predator there is, and I think we are their prey. In fact, John Lear said that much to my brother one time. My brother asked him in a long phone conversation with John Lear years ago. He said he was asking about all these questions, and John Lear asked him, he said, excuse me, Michael, do you think we're at the top of the food chain? And then I asked my brother later, I said, well, what was your answer? He said, I didn't have one. What do you think? I said, no, I don't think we are. We'd like to think we are.
Yeah. Something's going on.
But we're not. Something's going on.
How many people on this planet, Rob, just disappear and we don't know where they are? I would guess we're talking about hundreds of thousands of people. They're just gone.
If you talk about it over decades, probably millions. They just vanish. Now, again, most of the disappeared in our country are disappearing because they want to or because
some sicko does that. Yeah.
Right, but when you have approximately 900,000 to 1 million people on average disappearing a year in our country alone, and you multiply that times all the other major populated countries in the world, you're coming up with a figure in the millions every year, so even a fraction of that would come up be in the hundreds of thousands, so over a period of decades we're talking millions.
You know, this could be the most frightening story ever.
And I think it's the most overlooked story ever, if you want to know the truth. That's why I wrote this book. The death of UFO researchers, the death of anyone related to UFOs in massive numbers under the strangest circumstances, the disappearance of people. This is not a good thing by anyone's stretch of the imagination.
What would you think the reaction be if governments came out and said, okay, here's the bottom line. We've been visited. We're being visited. We can't stop them. They're taking people. They're taking people from this planet to the tune of a million a year. We can't stop it. We don't know what they want. These million people never come back. We can't stop it. There'd be widespread panic.
I think there would be. And in my book, Darker Side of the Moon, They're Watching Us, I end it by telling people what I think they should do. I tell them that if they see a UFO and it looks like it's coming toward them for any reason whatsoever, run, hide, do whatever you have to get away. If you're in a car and it's coming towards you, get out, get into a culvert, go run into the woods, do whatever you
can. Don't sit there and wave at it, right?
Don't sit there and wave at it or walk up to it and try to touch it and think, ooh, this is a shiny object. That's probably not a good thing to do. I also recommend, and I think I'm a very pragmatic, very down-to-earth kind of person, but sheer common sense says that even for any emergency, you should be prepared. And I think there's enough evidence that this is a dangerous situation, and I think people should be prepared. I think they should have enough food on hand. I think they should have escape plans to get out of an area quickly by using back roads. They should have what to do in case of an electromagnetic pulse or anything like that. I think it's just good common sense. I'm not saying they need to become survivalists and live underground the rest of their lives, but I do think rational people should always consider possibilities that might happen.
You know, can you imagine what it would be like? You're on a dark road, you're in your car, you see a bright object float over your head. Maybe it's in front of you, on the side of the road or in front of you, and you get out of your car, and all of a sudden, you're gone. You're abducted. You're taken. You're on this craft, and you see these beings, and you're gone. You see little planet Earth getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And they take you for whatever purpose. To me, that's frightening.
Oh, it's more than frightening, because if you consider the real possibility that these abductees are not given any kind of pain medication for what's done to them, you can look forward to basically what amounts to torture. I mean, this is torture. Just because they make you forget you were tortured doesn't mean you weren't tortured and didn't feel the pain.
That's right. You ever see the movie The Dentist?
Yes, I did.
It's a horrible movie, but you talk about pain. This wacko dentist goes out and he flips out, and so all his patients he either kills or he tortures them. And you know what? That's what these ETs could be doing to people.
Well, in a very real sense, I think they are. I don't think they're doing it just because they're sadistic. I think they're doing it for very, explicit reasons. But I do think they are basically doing what amounts to torture, which is another violation of our human rights.
Yes,
there's
no doubt.
I don't care how you look at it. They either don't have a concept of rights or they just don't care. But either way, it's not good news for us.
And they know they can't be stopped.
Exactly. And you mentioned that the government might be involved and might come out someday and tell us this. And I think if they told us, I don't think we would panic just because there were UFOs. Most Americans.
No, but they'd panic if they knew we were being taken.
If we were being taken and things were being done to us and they couldn't stop it. A worst-case scenario would be the government knows what's happening and is in collusion with it and actively promoting and helping it. That would be particularly frightening.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, when we take calls next hour, maybe some people can share stories with us that they've lost people, they don't know where they are. Let's talk, if we can, Rob, when we come back about the Dyatlov Pass incident again. That's a great story. We'll get into that. Well, I need to hit a milestone, so I need 100 of you to go and watch our television programs on beyondbelief.com, and you can sign up and watch it for free, and who knows, you may want to stay as a regular. But just go to the website, beyondbelief.com. And welcome back to Coast, Rob Schelsky with us, and we're talking about his works, which you can find linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Let me read a little bit about the Dyatlov Pass incident for everybody. The Dyatlov Pass incident was an event that resulted in the death of 9 skiers north of the Ural Mountains, that's in Russia, on the night of February 2nd, 1959. The incident happened on the eastern side of an area called Kolat Shakil, whose name is Mountain of the Dead. Since then, the mountain pass where the incident occurred is called the Dyatlov Pass, based on the name of the group's leader, Igor Dyatlov. The absence of witnesses and the subsequent investigations concerning the death of the skiers inspired intense speculation. Investigators determined that the skiers tore their tent inside out, fleeing on foot under heavy snowfall, some without shoes. Although the bodies show no signs of struggle, two victims had fractured skulls and two broken ribs. Soviet authorities determined that an unknown compelling force had caused the deaths. Access to the region was consequently blocked for hikers and adventurers for up to 3 years after the incident. Due to the lack of survivors, the chronology of events remains uncertain. Rob, a bizarre story.
An incredible story, actually, and a frightening one.
Did you investigate it?
Yes, I did. I went into it in some detail, and I looked at all the possible answers in detail, and I think the only plausible answer really is UFOs. I know the Yeti theory was very prominent for a while, but the evidence doesn't seem to support that.
Why would people in sub-zero weather be in tents without shoes on or socks? And then when they fled in their bare feet or with one sock on or something like that.
Yes, and they had all their winter weather gear in the tent with them. It would have been nothing to snatch it up. One of them actually ran out with his camera, but not his clothes.
Something made them want to run and run fast.
Well, it wasn't just that. They didn't run out the entrance of the tent. They clawed their way or cut their way through the sides of the tent that they were in such a panic to get out.
To get out of the tents, yeah.
And apparently they couldn't go out the entrance, so they went out another way, and they literally ran through the snow. Several were found in a ravine with cracked ribs, as you were talking about. Also, one woman had her tongue pulled out.
Bizarre.
Does that remind you of anything, maybe animal mutilations?
Exactly. There was one person who left earlier. He went back. He wasn't feeling well. His name was Yuri Yudin, and he died just a few years ago. But he was the only person who basically got out of that situation. And again, he left before the incident occurred. He was one of the lucky ones.
Yeah, he never actually took the trek that they took. He stayed in the village and didn't go with them. And so, yeah, he was lucky by sheer chance. It's a lot like these people who fly in these planes that disappear. If you, for some reason, didn't go, you're so lucky after the fact. But, of course, you don't know that ahead of time. He had no premonition, particularly, I don't believe. Although, I take that back. It was said that he did not feel good about the trip. He said he was unwell. That was what one witness said.
Right.
So,
right.
And also, you know, there were orange spheres sighted in the area the night that all this happened.
What do you think happened? What was so frightening to make them tear their tents from the inside out?
Okay, that's difficult. I mean,
that's bizarre.
Whatever scared them to the point of sheer absolute panic, not one, but all of them. Whatever did this to them made them die very bizarre deaths under very strange circumstances.
They were scared from within the tents.
They were scared from within the tents, but yeah. Whatever it was must have been near the entrance of the tent because they didn't try to go out the front. They went through the walls of the tent.
So it was like peering in through the front.
Peering in, or had come into the tent just through the entrance, and so
or it was coming, or it was blocking it, or something.
Or something, yeah. So we can establish that something was near the entrance or in the entrance of the tent.
How big was the tent? I mean, how many people did it house?
Well, it housed all of them, so it was it was a group of nine.
So maybe it was about 15 by 15, 20 by 20, or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it was tight quarters. In those days, they didn't allow for extra room like they do now.
Maybe the size of somebody's single-car garage or something.
Even less,
okay.
I would presume. And it would be very tight. I'm sure they were laying side by side and very close to each other.
And they were all trying to cut away to get out?
They apparently, none of them left by the entrance. They all went out through the side walls of the tent. There's evidence they were slashed with knives. These people were in an absolute panic. They wanted out, and nothing was going to stop them, not having clothes in sub-zero conditions, nothing. And, you know, this region has a long history of being a deadly, dangerous area, too.
What's the theory about ball lightning? May have come into the tent and they tried to run out.
That was one of the theories I investigated, and yes, it would account for it. It might have accounted for a couple of the deaths. It doesn't explain the other deaths. It doesn't explain why they ran as far away as they did and why they didn't go back to get their clothes. One of them, or some of them, tried to start a fire, apparently, rather than go back to the tent. Now, first of all, I don't think ball lightning would scare people to the point of sheer panic. It might if they saw it kill someone. You'd want to get out, you'd want to get out fast. But I have the strong feeling that eventually, when you got cold enough, you'd start to creep back towards that tent and see if it was still around.
I want you to give us a scenario, and I want you to kind of paint a picture for us. You've got 9 people in a tent. It's freezing outside, minus zero. Most of them aren't dressed. That's bizarre. But paint the picture for us. What do you think's going on in there?
I think these orange orbs or spheres were something extraterrestrial. I think something came to them. I think some creature, call it an alien, whatever you want to, appeared at the entrance to their tent. I think it did something to those closest to the tent entrance that scared the others, or maybe the sheer look of it scared them to the point of absolute panic. We're talking absolute panic here, judging by what they found. They cut their way out of the tent. They ran out into the snow.
Screaming and yelling.
They ran some distance. There's no evidence that anything followed them. The only footprints that exist are theirs, no others.
Where would they run to? Why run?
You would, if you're in a blind panic, you just run.
You just run. Okay. So they're in bare feet. They're in stockings. It's just one sock on, one sock off. But they're just running. Where are they going?
Well, apparently some headed for the trees, hoping to find some shelter there, maybe some wood for a fire. Others were found, I think it was 4 or 5, were found in a ravine some distance away.
Minus degrees out there.
It's impossible conditions. You can't exist out there very long under those conditions.
No.
I don't know about you, but if it was ball lightning and something came in the tent and maybe harmed someone and I panicked and ran out, my panic would certainly go away in short order under those conditions.
And I'd come back.
And I would come back. I'd come back very slowly, very carefully, and I'd creep up on the place. I'd make darn sure whatever was there was gone, but I'd want to get one of those fur coats around me. I mean, that's just logical. When you're shivering to death, you will do this.
Can ball lightning go through material?
Ball lightning apparently has some very odd, you know, being electricity, it apparently has the capability of passing. I'm not going to say through solid walls, but it might be able to pass through fabric. However, the fact that ball lightning might come in through the entrance of the tent seems unusually coincidental to me. Why would you have ball lightning pick that spot to come through? Mind you, the entrance was closed. Even so, it apparently came through the entrance of the tent. If it was ball lightning, it would float around. I've not heard of ball lightning harming people. Also, ball lightning does not seem to be associated as something that just happens out of the clear blue. It's normally associated with lightning strikes. Then ball lightning is spotted forming immediately in its aftermath. So there's some really difficult questions about it being ball lightning.
Here's some of the bizarreness of this case. The one person who came down alive, came back, said that they recall seeing the skin of the dead, all deep brown, as a tan. Some of the hikers had gray-white hair. They said it was premature aging. Some of the hikers' clothing, 2 pants and a sweater, found to be radioactive. Another group of hikers reported that they saw strange orange spheres in the night sky to the north, as you just mentioned. Some others report that there was a great deal of scrap metal in and around the area, speculation that the military had utilized the area secretly and might have been engaged in a cover-up. All strange stuff?
It is all strange stuff, and there is some logic to it. It was under the flight path of ICBMs, so the orange spheres could be accounted for that way. What isn't accounted for is the panic. Why would people panic and rush out into the night and the cold? If something crashed that was radioactive, you first of all, probably wouldn't know it was radioactive unless you had a Geiger counter. Secondly, I don't know that it would cause sheer panic since it didn't strike the tent or anywhere near the tent.
You wouldn't cut your way out. You'd go out the front door if you were going to go out.
You'd go out the front door, exactly, sir. Yes, you would. And so logically, it just doesn't seem to really apply. Whatever made them leave that tent made them leave, again, under the most extreme terms of panic. I don't think a vehicle crashed nearby, even if it were a spaceship, would cause that.
No. You still go out the front door.
You still got the front
door. So something came in the front or was by the front where they couldn't get out, and it scared the living daylight out of them.
Absolutely. And a lot of people think it might have been a Yeti. Even in their diary, they joked about the abominable snowman, you know, the snowman.
Were there other footprints out there?
No, there were none. There's no evidence of that whatsoever. There's no evidence that they were attacked. One of them did have a cracked skull, a slight fracture in the skull. The other one had some cracked ribs. But there was no, that was another thing, there was no bruising.
So what if the nine are in there, and let's say seven of them are kind of huddled toward the back, and two are in the front, and those two start dematerializing because they're being beamed aboard a ship or something? Is that possible? And the others see this and they run.
Anything is possible, but it doesn't seem likely because
right,
if we're being dematerialized and the others decided to run, we can account for all nine of them. They weren't dematerialized.
All right, rule that out. Rule out a Yeti because there are no footprints of this creature.
Exactly. And it doesn't seem to be any other sort of wild beast for the same reason. Also, the types of the deaths and the symptoms of the deaths, like you said, were very strange. Looked like there was radiation damage that caused the graying of the hair and things like
mm-hmm.
that. The truth is the Soviet government couldn't come up with an answer. They just referred to it, the reason, as being a compelling force of nature. So that basically says it all. Something happened to them, and they don't know what it was. But if you do it by a process of elimination, I can only think it had to have been something alien. And again, in this case, it had to have been something alien that was terribly scary.
Ugly, also, ugly scary.
Ugly scary, and also something that would account for their deaths. You'd have to be terribly afraid not to go back to something that's a mere few hundred yards away.
Well, especially when you know you're going to die out there in the elements.
Absolutely, and they preferred to try to start a fire, and actually did start a small one, apparently, rather than go back. They did anything and everything they could except go back to where all their equipment and warmth was.
But most of them were dressed with barely anything on.
They ran in their underwear. You know, normally when you sleep like that in sleeping bags, especially that time, you didn't wear clothing. It was actually better not to if you were in the sleeping bags and that sort of thing. Kept you warmer. So they were in a state of undress when it happened, and they didn't take time to dress, nor did they go back to dress. One man was only in his underwear. Now, they tried to account for that by saying that, well, if you have hypothermia, in 25% of the cases, you actually can feel too hot. Your body is giving you a misreading.
Mm-hmm.
Strip off your clothes. It doesn't explain the other people's state of undress and why they didn't go back and get dressed. It doesn't explain how they died and why they died. It doesn't explain, and they also seem to die in two separate locations. And the tongue being torn out is very strange. They wanted to say, well, it was animals. But again, it doesn't look as if an animal did it.
And some of them had fractures, others did not.
And others did not. And yet none of them seemed to have the hemorrhaging or bruising one would associate with something that would cause your chest to have cracked ribs.
What are the Soviets, the Russians, what do they say?
Well, the Russians, that's their answer, a compelling force of nature. They simply don't know. They closed the case abruptly. At first they were examining it very carefully, but then suddenly they just slammed the lid on it, and that was it.
And for years, didn't they also make the files private?
Oh, the files were locked up during the entire time of the Soviet Empire. It wasn't until after the fall that the files finally became available. It was absolutely sealed. It was considered top secret, and nothing further was said about it. Now, frankly, if it had been one of their ICBM missiles or something like that, probably why not just say there was a test mishap and they were victims of the test? That is a true option.
Well, they would have been blown to shreds, though.
They would have been blown to shreds, and nothing crashed near them. There's no sign of anything having crashed right near them. Yes, there were pieces of metal found. And yes, there was radioactivity on some of their clothing, but not all of it. I mean, how does one explain this?
It should be all or none.
It should be all or none, right? Either you're irradiated or you're not. But there's the questions way outnumber the answer, and the only conclusion I can come to personally, since none of the other explanations seem adequate, is that something strange is going on there, and it was probably extraterrestrial nature.
Yeah.
Furthermore, I think that area has suffered from this for a very long time. You have a mountain called Mountain of the Dead, or Dead Mountain. You had the area that they were trekking to get there called Don't Go There in the native local tribe. And by the way, this isn't the only place like that. There are other places in the Siberian area where they have these metal half-convex objects, like half-domes. And wherever they are, nothing grows. And people are warned not to go near them because they will kill you. And those areas are named the same. And those things have been there so long that the local tribespeople have named one of their rivers was named for one of these things. Cauldrons, they call them cauldrons. Mm-hmm.
Do they still talk about this case in Russia?
Yes, they do talk about it. Of course, it's like here. They don't talk about it officially, but there is an official museum. It's at, I don't want to even try to pronounce the name, but they have one, and they are trying to come up with more information, but they have whatever information they have is at the museum that they have access to. And yes, there are people still talking about it, people still investigating.
Yekaterinburg.
Thank you.
That's the area.
That than I am.
That's where their foundation is, right?
Yes, it is, yes. And they have a memorial there to the nine of them. So, Russian is difficult for me to pronounce. I can do the Greek and the Latin, but the Russian's a bit hard for me.
Nyet. That's about all I know.
I know Dvodich, too, and that's about it.
Or Dozvodanya.
Dozvodanya, I know that one as well. And that's it. That's my Russian. So, and, of course, even the name, you know, do you pronounce it Dyatlov or Dyatlov? But, this is an interesting case. And, again, Russia seems to have a long history of this, especially in that region. When your native tribes people are naming regions as Dead Mountain, Don't Go There, Cauldron River,
exactly.
The place of the dead, this is not good news either.
Well, in this little Canadian area that these people disappeared, that's fascinating, too.
And it's very similar in a way, isn't it? Except that you didn't find any bodies. They just completely vanished. And it's strange because one can only conclude that somehow, without any proper clothing or weapons or supplies, food, water, whatever, they managed to walk so far away that no one ever found them again.
What about those citizens of Roanoke Colony? Remember that back in the 1500s? They were seen in 1587. And they, 30 men, women, and children, vanished without a trace.
Including Virginia Dare.
Yeah, just gone.
And the only thing they found that might have pertained to it is the word croton carved into a tree, the bark of a tree. That's all they know. And these people were never found again. No trace of them or their belongings that they might have had with them were ever found. No bodies, no skeletons, nothing. They simply and utterly vanished. So it's the lost colony of Virginia, Roanoke Island. So,
And obviously this fishing village, this Inuit fishing village in Canada, where all these people disappeared, something's not right.
No, again, and of course in my books I constantly say something is going on, because that's my impression. Something is going on, and whatever it is not good. Not good for us, anyway.
No, it's bizarre.
It's
you know what, and here's this other thing, the missing Malaysia plane 370. Lots of conclusions. I'm writing a book with David Wayne and Richard Belzer. It comes out next month, as a matter of fact. It's almost finished. But we kicked around various theories, and you know what? Something may have taken that, too.
And it's not the only one. There was a bomber that flew from Florida to the Mediterranean, and it had refueled once in air. It was getting ready to refuel again and simply disappeared.
Just disappeared. Let's take some calls, Rob, when we come back in just a moment. The full calls about the hollow moon or people who are simply taken.